Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody that is hopefully for somebody. Welcome to episode 120. My name is Kyle Naranya, and I am joined. He's back. Our most featured guest, Rob Keyes, is back.
Is that true? Hi, am I the most? Really? Oh, man. It feels like you always offer, and I'm like, I'm too busy. And I am, usually.
Yeah, you are busy. You're a very busy man. You do way too many things, but obviously most of my listeners know you from Screen Rant. Yeah, I feel like you've definitely been on the most. I wish there was a way I could look at this more quickly on Anchor, but I definitely can't.
We should tell everyone I'm using caffeine and an alarm to be on here tonight.
I mean, we're dads. That's pretty much our lives at this point. Yeah. So that's not necessarily shocking. I'm trying to think. I can't. It's too many things. Yeah, no, you've definitely been on the most. Even if it's
more than Steven, I thought Colbert did a whole bunch.
Steven's been on 4 or 5. You might be even now. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll make it. I mean, you're more.
You're not doing Podcast X anymore, so you're on this more frequently now.
Hey, we're on a little break. We're a little busy. We'll be back.
Okay, how long was the Total Geek Hall break? Like 4 years,
and then you guys
you're still on break. All right. Yeah. What's not on break?
That is like 4 years or 6 years.
You know what though? I think that had the best theme song of the three pods, in my opinion. I like the Total Geek All stuff, like the VHS tape clicking in.
Yeah, I like that.
That was
the whole
really
theming.
Cool.
That was, by the way, props to Andrew Dice. I don't know, has he been on this podcast before?
I've been trying to get Dice. He's like my white whale. I've tried to have him on for all the Snyder stuff, and he's always busy. Guy has one kid, and he thinks he's busy.
Only one. Yeah, it's full of excuses, man. Well, I'll try to push him to get him on. But all props to him for the branding of Total Geek All. That's all his idea, even the name. So he did. That was big time him.
So this week's episode is, as was announced at the end of Moana 2. Moana 1 came out in 2016. Moana 2 came out last week. Rob and I are going to be discussing the first two episodes of Skeleton Crew and the first two episodes of Creature Commandos. Because these are TV discussions, spoilers for both of the shows with the two episodes. I know Rob's seen more, so we're just going to try to talk about the things that I have been able to see, not on those screener lists, maybe someday. So we're going to start with Skeleton Crew, because at this point, it's the oldest. And looking at the release schedule, when you listen to this, potentially the next day, episode 3 will be coming out. So we're going to jump into Skeleton Crew now.
You can make it! I'm gonna take a shortcut! A what? A shortcut!
Rob, tell everybody why this show sucks.
Come on now, that's not fair. That's not fair. That's not fair. I mean, come on. It's no Andor. Let's be real.
Can I say something before you get started? Because obviously I read your initial reaction and I thought it's fair. Andor, Bad Batch, those are the bars that Star Wars TV is trying to reclaim. My first initial thought, because obviously I know yours because you shared it, was watching this was kind of a mixed bag of stuff. But the first thing that came to my mind while watching this should have been animated.
I think you're right in that it would have been a great, these type of characters, this type of storytelling would totally work if it was A, animated, but also B, like 22 episode season. You know what I mean? Then that pacing and styling. And then you could, because like before, I know we're kind of derailing right off the bat here, but like these new style of locations and this heavy leaning into the piracy and the suburbia and this kind of world, it's all very weird, but you can push that vibrancy further in animation and just run with it. And the tone and pacing would work better in that format. I agree. As I think it's an 8-episode series. That ran 27 to 37 minute episodes. It's just, this is the Disney Plus problem with Marvel and Star Wars, where they're just like, episodically, most of these shows are so unsatisfying week to week. These short run times, these like skipping over character beats, it makes me miss, and I hate to use this word, the filler episodes of a show like Lost, where we got 24 hours of TV and these ensemble or characters that become icons, you can watch them act. And develop characters. But let's go back to the beginning here. So Skeleton Crew, very first thought. It's like, it's just okay. It's totally fine. There are elements that are good and there are elements that are just not, but nothing about it is great outside of the production value.
I 1000% agree with that. I think the production value immediately was something that I noticed. Everyone on planet Earth who has any idea of what these shows look like knows about the volume. I know everyone is sick of talking about it. So that was the first thing that kind of I clicked in, was like, oh, we built sets. That's exciting.
Yeah. They did, and they felt sets out kind of different too, which is nice too. Like the planet, this weird kind of isolated planet and its suburban lifestyle is interesting. From the marketing materials, it felt like so over the top. Like, it's just, okay, we get it. You love Amblin content. You're trying to do the Goonies ET thing. We know, but you're not getting there. This is, to me, you watch the first couple episodes or any sort of character sequence with the early Stranger Things. You watch this, and you know, maybe this is a younger audience, whatever. It's still no comparison. And by the way, Stranger Things didn't need alien planets and alien technology and Star Wars IP. It was characters, right? This and dialogue, and I don't think this has that. But look, the combine the pacing, complete lack of nuance with forget the suburbia stuff, this whole piracy thing. Like, and you have to remind me, I don't want to say something I'm not supposed to. I've seen three episodes, and it was weeks ago. So I don't recall, but can you?
I'll run through what's in episodes 1 and 2, which is probably easiest.
Okay, yeah, I won't say that part. But this is with pirate theming, you have literally guys with like flintlock style blasters. You have people wearing, there's pirate hats and pirate daggers. And again, I don't want to say some things, but it's so over the top. It's like, guys, we get it. You don't have to go that far.
We're not nautical pirates.
It's like. We're recreating sequences from Hook, and I actually like that movie. Most people don't. I like that. I like Hook. It was too much of that. I was waiting for like Rufio. You know, I just felt like I was in a different thing. And it's like, guys, you don't need to make this Star Wars if you really don't want it to be Star Wars. But in either episode 2 or 3, there are some interesting teases about lore, which are interesting, and there's some room to explore some Star Wars lore. I'm being very careful with my words here. But again, that leans into the problem with most Star Wars shows where it's like, oh, you're holding back information because it's a marketing, because there has to be a twist or reveal. I'd rather there be none of that and just have these characters go on a journey. Because did these things help Mandalorian in season 3, or did these help the Acolyte? No. The best show is the one called Andor, which there's no secrets. You know what everyone's trying to do and you know how it ends, right? So it's like, I want them to stop hiding things, like stop hiding names of things or reasons people do things or who people really are. Yeah, to me, it's just okay. And I can tell you one more thing before I pass it to you. I'm very curious what you think. But I think it's so uninteresting, despite my personal love for it, that genuinely on the internet, people will be misled by Twitter. General audience just absolutely do not care. Outside of the Jude Law hook, there's nothing here for anyone yet in this show. And that's after seeing 3 episodes. So Star Wars, this is not helping Star Wars' problem in telling innovative, cool stories. And from a quality perspective, while production values are great, and I kind of like what I'm seeing, this still doesn't hold a candle to any of the last 10 sci-fi leaning Apple shows or anything on HBO, or even like some of these lesser quality, more pulpy Amazon Paramount shows. So it's like, there's still behind the ball despite spending more money, and that's so disappointing.
Well, no, it's so interesting because Amblin, if we have any Gen Z listeners, they're gonna have no idea what we're talking about. And I know it's a phrase that I've used a lot too, which is that idea. And I mean listeners know I don't love Stranger Things because I think there's a lot of things that inspired Stranger Things that are better than Stranger Things, but that's neither here nor there. But that concept of a group of younger children discovery, like, and that adventure helping them come to a realization of who they are, right? E.T., Goonies, Stranger Things obviously has some elements of that. Shazam is an example of something that I did think succeeded with doing that Amblin aesthetic. I mean, let's not talk about anybody in that and any other politics because it's just so exhausting. But what I found more frustrating than anything, and I'm glad you brought up this point. I don't want to talk about Acolyte, but listeners, if they did listen to my Acolyte summer wrap-up review, which was like a bunch of different shows all at once. That was the most frustrating part to me about that is already present to me in this, which was I really liked, I can't even remember his name now, and I think that's kind of an indication of the story, but the actor from Squid Game, what was Master Soul? There I go, I found it. Like that concept of somebody doing something wrong, but they are trying to do what they thought morally was the right decision is way more interesting and complex to follow along than deliberately not telling us or hiding things from us in the storytelling. This show, flashing forward to Skeleton Crew, I would be completely, it opens with a pirate mutiny, and don't get, I love seeing practical effects. We've got a werewolf pirate man, and I love that. And then we've got Urkel with like some Data headgear on. I mean, actually, there's a kid who actually looks just like Data, although she's of an Asian descent. And we have a pirate captain sounding like Jude Law in a robot helmet. who then a mutiny happens and he disappears, but we never see his helmet get taken off because he's unsuccessful. Quite literally, this is the start of Black Sails, which is a vastly better pirate show. We were talking about Andrew Dice earlier, one of my favorite shows of all time. And I don't actually mind space pirates. We were talking about Bad Batch, and outside of Star Wars Resistance, which was not good, the Star Wars animated properties under Disney's ownership of the property have been incredible. Personally, I like Rebels just for the simplicity of it not being Skywalker focused, but I did love Clone Wars, particularly near the end. Everyone knows it gets better as it went along. And then Tales of the Jedi, Tales of the Sith have been great. And then Bad Batch was absolutely incredible. Rip Tech, I loved him. But this shows, you brought up filler, and I think that's a really good indication just in general on something Disney is struggling with when it comes to writing TV. And I always go back to like comments Eric Kripke has made, having cut his teeth on network TV. And filler episodes, while not necessarily essential to the plot, the focus on those episodes is always on character development. You're giving us an opportunity to have a sandbox adventure with one person, a bottle episode, as they're known in the industry. And then we really get to know these people. This show introduces four cute kids, and they're conventional in a lot of ways. I'm convinced that Wim's dad is autistic based on the way he reacts when Wim disappears into a spaceship, because he says next to nothing. And I was kind of, as parents, we'd be absolutely losing our minds that our kid is disappearing into the unknown on a spaceship. So I found that kind of an interesting choice. And going for a familiar aesthetic with the Amblin stuff, I don't necessarily mind. As you've already discussed, the production design, I appreciate that. These worlds need to feel tactile. There's this convention that Star Wars only holds up in our minds because of certain things. And an aspect that I've always appreciated, particularly from the theatrical cuts of the original trilogy, is, and why I like something like the despecialized editions as opposed to the special editions, when you're adding HD to a miniature, it's always going to be something that existed, unlike polygons at one particular time frame being 1999, and them just looking worse and worse over time. So I appreciate having a concept for the set design, but when you have episodes at the length you've already established, if each of these first two episodes is an hour long, you've given us a movie to set everything up. At this point, with actual storytelling, because I was clocking it this time, we have 40 minutes, 6 minutes with credit, or 8 minutes with credits in episode one. And then in episode two, 26. So quite literally half the length of the storytelling. And outside of the cute friendship between Wim and Neil, where one is kind of a stargazing kid, and I like this setup of these kids, I don't really feel like I know them at all. So them being torn away from their families should be devastating. But when we don't know who they are, how these, like, what are their real relationships outside of basics? We know that Fern is clearly well off, but she's rebelling against that. Okay, that's a sentence. I couldn't tell you anything else about her. She's doing a race, but I don't know what the setup is for this. And then these characters have no interaction outside of digging out the spaceship, and then they're blast onto the journey. So all of their character dynamics amongst their little, their crew, I don't know how any of this is going to work. And I'm not invested because the dynamic is not present. Okay, Fern is interesting because of her relationship with wanting to be the go-to leader. She has more confidence than Wim. So is what are these characters going to learn from this journey? And then another thing, I like Nick Frost as the droid, who then just gets offed in episode 2. And then we see Jude Law and he's like, hey, guess what? I use the Force. And I'm watching this, I think having a keen enough eye going, when do we find out he was the captain? Episode 4, episode 5, because this is a waste of time just not telling us about this. And it's been a battle I've had with listeners and people commenting whenever I've talked about films or TV shows. I mean, it's mostly films that are aimed at children or family-friendly films. We were talking before the podcast about The Wild Robot. I will beat this drum till the day I die. If you treat your audience with respect of all ages, you will maintain everybody's focus. But when you're, as you mentioned already, when you're writing a show to have interesting reveals on Twitter, like you'll never believe who the captain was in Skeleton Crew, well, you've already lost. You're not telling an interesting story. If all you have are bad twists, this story wasn't worth telling to begin with. And I hate that feeling. Because I loved the trailer having Major Tom in Star Wars language. I thought that was awesome. And the pitch for this clearly was John Watts went, we're going to do Goonies with Star Wars. Okay, fine. But how does that actually work as a Star Wars show? So far, it doesn't.
Yeah. It's they're really struggling to find an identity for this. They're trying to have their kicking eat it too in a little way. Like, obviously, they're trying to fast pace the kids on the adventure. But you're right. They sacrifice any sort of understanding who they are. But it's like, wait, there are no rules in streaming. They can have an hour and a half episode and then another hour, an hour, hour. Like, why are we getting such short episodes spread out like this? It's, again, I used the word unsatisfying from the beginning because it's like, if anyone asks me, should I watch the show? I'll be like, no, oh my God, no. Wait until it's done and then just watch it all together. Like, this is, there's nothing here week to week. It is lifeless. And they're not telling you anything, right? So the characters, I mean, use a Stranger Things comparison. You learned a lot at the very beginning of season 1 of Stranger Things, the first episode. Every character, you kind of met their family. You got more interesting dynamics, even with their siblings, who you'd think should matter not at all. But they kind of do, because there's a lot of back and forth with all of that in the first couple seasons. And those episodes are juicy, heavy. No spaceships required. And I was super captivated. Yeah, that's something this doesn't really have. And also, it is so obviously catering towards a younger audience. When you actually watch the show, the tone of it, and the way it's presented on Disney Plus, especially coming after like The Acolyte, which is like complete antithesis of this, there's no, that's not kid friendly at all. They gotta choose a direction. Like this is not, I mean, you and I have watched it now, so we can say, oh, this is younger demographic for sure, but it's like it really isn't, because that's not where Star Wars is in live action TV. They haven't built that. And what they have built is something that's not high quality, right? So aside from Andor, which again, not at all for kids. So yeah, it's a weird thing. And your other point about withholding information, these twists, there's a Jude Law of it all. Where, and by the way, I should say, I was genuinely surprised when that opening prologue sequence happened with pirates. I didn't expect that to be there. I didn't expect to show Jude Law is very likely his pirate captain, and that's why he's going to be thrown in the brig. I'm like, oh, that's interesting, because the marketing materials make you think, oh, he's a kind of a weird, questionable Jedi in hiding or something. And it's like, oh, that's not maybe at all what this is. And then the Force thing he does, and it's like, Is he tricking everyone? I don't understand. Like, why is that a secret from us?
It'd be so much more interesting if you're like, there's this is a pirate captain they meet in the midst of the adventure who has been mutinied from his own crew and he's out for vengeance. Okay, but the best way to do this is with these kids. When you present that, like, an unlikely pairing of these children and this, like, potentially horrible person, that's so much more interesting to me than like...
Right. I agree. So that's why Jude Law is the only interesting part of this. And I can tell you from an internet metric standpoint, that is also the only thing people care about. Because like the dialogue with the kids has not helped them at all. Like, it's just not well done. And there are moments of great. I actually like the actors pretty well, and the character design, and like who their tropes they're embracing are cool. And everyone loves Neil, and that moment where he has to like take command of the thing from the trailer, it's really, really funny. Even my daughter hasn't seen the show, but I showed her the trailer and she thought that was the funniest thing in the world. So there's fun. That's fun. And Neil's family too, also very fun. Like that, they did a good job there, but I'm like,
well, that's a great one. That is a good scene. I have to say, from a character standpoint, you were talking about Stranger Things, kids, families. I loved when Wim goes to see Neil and he sees the other siblings, like he doesn't even have to speak. And the little kid just like points.
See, that is great. It shows you that you can do stuff with these characters. Let them live a little bit. But again, it's like with what Disney's doing, it's all the problems combining. Like, again, if it was a binge drop, you'd get away with that. We talked about the animation format. Would be another solution to that. The identity crisis between what shows are for who. Forget that. But let's go back to the twist part of it. They don't even explain really. Again, this is withholding for later intentionally, like what this planet is really is all about. What's the great task or great work they're doing? You know what I mean? What's the role with the Old Republic or whatever it was? You know what I mean? So, and they escape through the barrier and they don't show that. It's the first time we haven't seen a spaceship do the thing. So it escaped through a thing and they just withheld that from the audience or didn't spend to show that. It's like, what? It felt missing. They're not following their own rules here. And it's like,
I just realized what I think this show needs, which is the irony is for a long time, this was maligned for doing this. This actually should have started like something in Treasure Planet, because we see Wim reads these Jedi books. This should have started with like some story about, because apparently, what the hell's the place called? Aden. Is like where this lost treasure is. Show us this like great treasure, like pirate story of this thing, but don't give us the name of the place. Like there was this great treasure that all these pirates are after. Like where would it, like old style, like almost not even like a painting, but however you could do it in a children's Star Wars book, like within universe to set up what's going on.
So, yeah, they've created, I mean, you're piecing it together, they've created a new mystery location, right? That with probably holds something of value from the old times, and it's like, well, cool. But why are you holding it all back in this way or revealing it this way? But and to go back to the other side of it, which is the Jude Law of it all, like you're right. I think him being a true scoundrel and maybe not one that turns as quick as Han Solo is kind of interesting. That's kind of cool too. Him using the kids to escape and maybe find this treasure. Ooh. What's with the Force thing? Is again, like, why throw that in there? Was that just for a trailer a year ago, or is like, is that really going to matter in the story? Is it a cheap gimmick, or clearly he can't be a Jedi. He wouldn't have been locked up this whole time. It's so silly. So,
well, we're 5 years after Return of the Jedi, right? The only time you can make a TV show in the Star Wars universe. Everyone,
aside from only what 0.3% of people died during Order 66 or something. So,
well, I mean, the hypothetically speaking, thinking more so about the OT, there were, because how old is Jude? This is kind of, I guess, relatively important. He's in 50s, his 50s. Yeah, okay. He's 51. So, I mean, is it possible that there were Force capable people that were, I guess, went? So if he's 50, he would have been born during six. He would have been born prior to 66 because the gap's 20 years.
Yeah, he's another Padawan who got away.
Well, honestly, I kind of hope he's not. Like that would be like that. That's one of the things I like about The Last Jedi. It's like it's there.
I agree. I don't think you need Jedi stuff at all. Although they show you these Jedi stories. But my only question is like, okay, hang on. If this guy can control the Force and just bring the keys to him, why is he waiting for the kids?
That's a great question.
It's because, oh, now I realize, oh, this is the only way I can get off this.
Did
rock.
They say we now have a ship?
Them. They did talk about
so
that.
So maybe.
Yeah. That's why he escapes with them. So maybe that's why. But it just feels like if you have these abilities, you could have gotten me with anything. So,
Or why didn't you mind trick anybody when they were like, oh, you.
But guess what? The only reason we don't know is because they chose as a story. Be like, hey, we're not going to tell the audience until episode 7. And it's like, okay, is that a better story for the, or is that just because you want us asking for the sake of asking? Like the twist format.
I blame WandaVision.
Ever help Star Wars?
WandaVision came out in January of 2021, and everything was like us guessing, and they're now obsessed with it, and I hate it.
Yeah, and all the goofy theories. Mephisto, every, you know what I mean? Yeah,
yeah, he's an iron.
And it, honestly, at least, iron. Well, there's also other things to come.
Iron what?
That's another story for another day.
Iron Heart. There we go.
Iron Heart, yes. But other stuff too coming up in the plans. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, everyone would say, "Oh, well, the Vader thing was, Empire Strikes Back. You know, he's the father."
They built up to that funny. Over 4 hours of storytelling.
That's it, and it was very singular to the main character, the main saga of it all. But even at the time, it was that. But I don't know the idea. It's just leads to disappointment. People are going to guess and theorize, like, why this is not helping. You don't want that kind of discourse. The discourse I want is like, oh, that was amazing. What's going to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, let's go back to it. But you know what I mean? I don't imagine watching Andor and you're like, oh, what are they trying to steal on this planet? What are they doing? Who are these people? It's like, no, they're rebels. They're getting the gold to stop the funding. You know what I mean? It's like, it just doesn't matter. It's the characters and the journey and the struggle and the motivation. It's like, whereas all these other Star Wars shows are like, they have nothing. So like, oh, we're going to hide mysteries. And then, you know, we're probably going to cancel the show and they'll add up to nothing. I'm being too harsh there. That's an Acolyte reference, but it's just ridiculous.
You know what this reminds me of? You probably haven't because you're always so busy. In the commentary for 21 Jump Street, which I love the first film, there is a really funny story that Phil Lord and Chris Miller, I were talking about Star Wars. They were working on Star Wars at some point and left for creative differences in heavy quotation.
Classic
Star Wars. And they said in their mind, so Neil Moritz produced those films because it was an original film, was the production company. This is all for the listeners. Rob is nodding because he knows this information. And so they were going back and forth on like, what's the mystery with the drugs? Like, how it's going to be this. And Neil Moritz would go, find the dealer, find the supplier. Like, just straightforward, like, find the dealer, find the supplier. Yeah. That's all you need it to be. And, like, same thing with Andor.
Yeah.
We're taking the money so they can't buy guns. We're taking the money so they can't buy guns. It's very simple.
Yeah, that's it.
Everything else is character. And so far...
And even the by the way, the Andor thing with the political side of it, who would have thought they would have made that captivating? A politician having to like hide from her family and just to get financing to fund the rebellion. It's so simple, but like how powerful are those moments? Oh my God. I get more of 10 minutes watching those two act or Skarsgård do anything than anything from any other live action Star Wars TV. And it's embarrassing that Lucasfilm, now I'm being super negative, but Lucasfilm's got to like take everything they think they're doing and be like, this is not good enough. We need to be not just at the level of Foundation and Silo and Dark Matter and all these shows, sci-fi shows and Apple. We need to be better because we're spending twice as much and we have the single most viable IP we need to maintain for the next century. Take everything they're doing and push them out. If they announce another show with Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni producing it, it's like they just don't give a shit. They have not learned. And this is the Kathleen Kennedy of it all. It's a tough thing to do, but the group they have is not pushing them to greatness. And by the way, this is a tangential thing. The reactions about like the Rotten Tomatoes of it all are hilarious. There's such an obsession with Rotten Tomatoes. And this is faring very well. It has like 94% or something. And they're showing it side by side with Andor, which is 95%. And I'm like, what? Guys, look at the scores. Like the average on Skeleton Crew is 7.1 out of 10 with the whatever X amount of reviews. And on Andor, it's 9.1 out of 10. It's 94%. That just tells you everyone agrees it's something. The something they agree is that it's 7 out of 10. That's good. Or for TV, that's not that great. It's okay on Rotten Tomatoes, TV, you know what I mean? But imagine getting every single reviewer to agree it's better than a 9. That is greatness. And that is something Disney needs to look at and be like, that's the blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else matters. Everyone should be paid with incentives based on that metric. And if you can't do it, get out of the way. Go make Willow season 2. You know what I mean? So
who knows? There's 6 more you've seen. I don't know. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. Rob, do you want to talk about Creature Commandos?
Yeah, I'll say one more thing. It's like, look, again, there's 5 more episodes left. It's like, no one, there's not enough excitement for this. This is not, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's actually fine. And honestly, if Mando season 3 didn't happen, if Boba Fett and Acolyte didn't happen, if Obi-Wan, you know, and it's so weird thinking about them all. Like Ahsoka and Obi-Wan are such mediocre shows too that tried to do different things with lore, especially Ahsoka. They tried to open up the whole universe, but the quality is just so, that's like a 6 out of 10 quality. You know what I mean? And the action and production value.
Obi-Wan
like
should have been a movie.
Yeah, they could have done it. You're right. And but the production values there was such a fail too. Like you just look back and like, oh my God, every single one of these things fumbled. And they had such huge opportunities with each one. And I don't understand how they're still continuing to allow mediocrity, or at best they get to a level where it's, oh, it's okay. It's the good enough does not exist in this IP on this platform. And I think Iger and Kennedy need to change everything. And honestly, I'll end on this point. The fact that the only movie it's actually happening for real is Mandalorian Grogu, whose lead actor was never on set for a day, is a disaster waiting to happen. There's no way that movie makes $1 billion. And the Star Wars film formula must make $1 billion. I'm so fearful that it's going to be just trash. And that's so unfair to say we've seen nothing about it, but it's a volume shot film without its lead by the same people who fumbled season 3 of Mandalorian. So yeah, Star Wars is in such a weird spot. And the other movies, which we thought would generate new things, have all been, I mean, they're at the drawing board. There's nothing, there's no shoot dates for any of them anymore. The Rey film keeps getting delayed. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but I'll tell everyone that guys just subscribe to Apple TV Plus and HBO and Amazon. And then just, if you want better TV. So I shouldn't be saying that because I grew up.
If you're Canadian, Crave is great. I love
Crave. Yeah.
This is the perfect pivot. Canada, why is Creature Commandos not on Crave, where that's where the Max and the HBO content are? I don't understand. All right.
I know you all aren't exactly enthusiastic about this mission, but...
General, I believe you've read us wrong. We're delighted to be here and delighted to serve our country.
Okay. Great.
You smiling?
Yes.
Sarcastically?
Mm-hmm.
So Creature Commandos, similar to Skeleton Crew, had a 2-episode debut. Episode 1 titled The Collie Wobbles and episode 2 titled The Tourmaline Necklace. This is, of course, the debut of the DCU from James Gunn. We're in a new universe. No, we're not. It just takes place after Suicide Squad. What are we doing? Rob, I'm so mad. Like, I understand. So, okay, Jermaine's probably losing it because, like, oh, this has all these great reviews.
Is that a Trump impression?
No. It's got all these. No, I don't actually think I even have one. Yeah.
Doing the dance.
Okay. I have said this publicly. It's been on everything. I am very cautiously optimistic for the true debut of the DCU with Superman in 2025. But what I don't appreciate is all of James's stuff being shoved into the new universe because it's like, this is the stuff I worked on. I get it. This is the stuff you like. I don't like this not being a clean break. I understand Peacemaker's probably going to discuss this in some way. As a comic book reader, I find this incredibly annoying, but that's just my problem. Actually, Creature Commandos, I really enjoyed it. I did. I thought it was fun. As an animation fan, however, it is budget as hell, but whatever. Here's my only real criticism, and then we can kind of go back and forth. I did, however, have the same feeling I did with the Suicide Squad with this, which is I think the music adds absolutely nothing. And I actually think it's a distraction because these characters, so complete flip from what we were talking about with Skeleton Crew, the established relationships presented, the introductions to the characters, the teases that is what we are going to see from them, I found really compelling, particularly the bride as kind of our co-lead with Rick Flagg Sr. I am invested in what the story is going to be. More than anything, I really hope this is a success because I would love to see the actors that they've cast, because they've signed these really odd contracts where they're going to voice and play them in live action and whatnot. I like the aesthetic of Creature Commandos being more abnormal than Suicide Squad. So I did enjoy it. However, I was kind of annoyed that they were like 22 minutes each. Like, again, you said, this is streaming. This was never meant to be on TV, but I watched it on Adult Swim. So that was quite annoying, but I like the maturity. It is an aspect of DC in particular that I really do appreciate, where we're going to get films likely in the United States, I'm going to use their rating, that are going to be PG-13. But James has said if it warrants it being more mature, it's going to be more mature. The Batman was PG-13, Penguin was rated R or M-18, mm-hmm. and it was an incredible television series. So outside of the, obviously, this is not as a refresh as we thought it was going to be. It's really just a sequel to two of James Gunn's projects. I thought this was pretty great.
I think it's more than great. And I say that coming as someone who has the benefit of seeing all 7 episodes. I was so happy I watched it that way. And I'm interested to hear that you did enjoy the first 2 episodes, given some of the things you're saying, because it took me an episode or two to kind of get into the animation and accept it. And the music, I kind of bounced off me. It's not memorable to me enough. I think it just fits. I think the way he's using music is not as a distraction or as the highlight, the same way it would be in Guardians. When you think of Guardians 1 and 2, there's like these needle drops. You're like, oh yeah, you think of those big music moments. With this, I guess even those Suicide Squad, to some extent, I don't think about that at all. I purely think about the character moments, which I think is probably for the better. You know what I mean?
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So I'm just thinking characters. And on paper, it's a very simple format. You get 7 episodes, you're kind of getting 7 little backstories, whatever. I actually forget what. See, so episode 2, is that the bride focused episode?
Yeah, it is. So you get her whole story.
Okay.
And it's brilliant. Like, I love the Frankenstein mythology. I've always enjoyed. I mean, I'm not going to be one of those people who's like, well, it's Dr. Frankenstein makes Frankenstein. It's one of those things that's just become so colloquial, people calling Frankenstein's monster Frankenstein. But already having it be so succinctly its own. So he's talked about not wanting to do the me. The irony in this to me is, and I know you'll appreciate this, is leading into Halloween, my wife, we wanted to watch some Halloween films, and just from random picks, she's like, you know what would be fun to watch? I'm like, what? She picked Van Helsing. And Van Helsing has a Frankenstein's monster that is very similar to David Harbour's Frankenstein's monster.
Like Hugh Jackman's Van Helsing?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because that Frankenstein, I don't know if you remember this, he talks eloquently. He's got a British accent. He speaks poetry. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a good movie, but he's not a lumbering like he's not that guy, right? And clearly Eric is not that. For one, I'm a big fan of Idira Varma. Like, she showed up in Obi-Wan for 5 minutes, had the big, oh no, she didn't have the big coat. Obi-Wan had the big coat. She was just walking next to him. That's your favorite scene in Star Wars history. But
great storytelling.
But this quite literally is, you could argue this has both of the things that none of Skeleton Crew does have, which is we're moving the plot forward of the story. And oh my, it's bothering me so much. They're saying Cersei. It's Cersei.
Oh yeah.
But whatever. Leviosa, whatever. But we've taken two of the characters for most of the episode. We've gone to Victor Frankenstein's former lab, and we're getting all the backstory. So you're now getting an understanding of the bride, what her relationships are, the horrible gaslighting that Victor is responsible for to some degree, and the relationship that she built with Victor, her creator. And I mean, that's a whole power dynamic thing I'm really uncomfortable with to begin with. But allowing it to be mature storytelling delivers that, and having the story also pushed forward where we know we have Cersei and all of her proud boys, right? And that being like being a part of the politics. We were talking about Andor, what that dynamic's going to be with the United States. Again, I know I moved my microphone and I was yelling about it. I do find it hilarious that the only thing that survived the DCEU was the Peacemaker universe.
Yeah. I think about that more. I love the show. You're going to love it. And it gets better. And then when you see like Dr. Phosphorus, is that his name? And like you see his story, and then you see like especially GI Robot, like these characters are really, really cool. So it was such a bold choice to choose Creature Commandos as a thing. And then to lead off with that.
The first thing they could get made. That's why.
It is. But it's also just a weird, by every metric, it's just a weird, weird choice. But
okay, is it though? Look who's running this universe.
That's what I'm saying. But how bold is that? At a time when DC was like twice falling apart, it feels like. I mean, outside of like, you know,
Matt Reeves. ADHD,
yeah, the writing stuff is solid. And like you said, Penguin's like an incredible show. Another amazing show that came out this year. Good luck, Marvel, getting there. Or Star Wars.
Daredevil.
Oh, Daredevil, which is what, 9 mini episodes versus 13 1 hours that Netflix gave us? Yeah, we'll see. They better. And I wrote this a long time ago. If that's not the greatest Marvel show that Marvel Studios has made, then fold up shop. Get off Disney Plus. You know what I mean? You're done. Get out. You cannot afford to ruin those characters. You got all the tools in the toolbox. You got Wilson Bethel back. You got Vincent back. Everybody's there. So you can't blow it.
Except the writers and the producers. And
the people who created it all and not getting credit for it. Yeah, I know. Standard. Okay, the show is amazing. The thing that you take issue with the canon and reset, they're in an impossible spot where they just cannot do a fresh restart, which is so unfortunate because James Gunn was already involved in the previous universe. Like, what is he going to do? Recast? Like, not do Peacemaker season 2? And then...
Yes, because it wasn't good.
Well, I disagree there. I love Peacemaker. I love those characters, and I definitely want to see season 2. And obviously, Warner Brothers was happy with it because they gave him the whole franchise and business and his business partner. No, but James Gunn doesn't... Outside of like his Guardians holiday special stuff, he doesn't miss with these kind of characters. Superman obviously is a real test given the importance of it all, and it's very different. It's not a group of outsiders. Although when you see Superman, it has a lot of extra characters in there who are not well known to main audiences, right? Like there is a bit of an ensemble there. You think of Misha Terrific and the certain
they chose. Star of the Arrowverse seasons 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Yeah, for people who care about quality content though, like they don't know who that is.
He was in Justice League Unlimited. That was a great show. How many
movies have been greenlit? Like, nobody knows who he is.
Well, none. You know what I mean? There's a lot of characters that should have been greenlit that haven't been. Warner Brothers has always mishandled this bad.
Maybe, but they're not mainstream. You know what I mean? So
that's true.
And certainly not, is it Sky Gardner, right? That Fillion's playing?
The worst Green Lantern of all time.
Which is hilarious. Like, and he's going to look...
No, it's not.
It is. And it's going to be... He's going to look ridiculous. It's going to be hilarious. So, you know, that's the Superman movie. Our first Superman movie has these other characters in it in prominent roles. So, among others. So, like, it's... We'll see how that plays out. But I
can... Can I ask you a question, though?
Yes.
About this, because I find this really interesting. And so this is where my hesitation is. I wouldn't argue with somebody that James Gunn doesn't know how to handle misfits, because obviously, generally, they are received well by audiences and critics. At what point, though, and I am enjoying Creature Commandos, but the more things I see that he does like this, they start to all feel the same.
Sure, you look at the Guardians ensemble where it ends and that kind of journey, and that's a weird thing. People will say Guardians 2, not that good, but I'm like, I don't know how much of that was Marvel Studios putting things in there versus...
I loved Guardians 3, I did.
I did too.
But like,
and I respect it
all
more.
Of these things, ensembles, that like, they work because he can have these characters that nobody cares about.
You
know what?
You just need 2 episodes where you've liked their backstories. You haven't seen shit about G.I. Robot. Now imagine there was no, he wasn't even in there. Like, you know what I mean? He took a character that's so obscure, gave you one like backstory episode with minimal screen time. And you're like, man, I'm hooked. I like this character.
But that's to me that the ultimate, like this is, I think it's such a praiseworthy comment that I'm obviously giving for this show, because even as a comic book reader, Also, are you reading Ultimate Spider-Man, by the way, right now?
It's any books right incredible. Now.
It's so good. But that's been, I think, something where James has truly succeeded. Obviously, yes, I know we disagree on Peacemaker, but when you have characters, and I know you were a diehard Guardians reader leading up to the initial films, that you're playing with characters that people are significantly less rigid about.
Yes.
Right? Like, and that is a super benefit, because if you have a specific take on these characters in your mind, I mean, it's clearly worked with the big three, right? Like, Matt Reeves' Batman is different than Christopher Nolan's, is different than Zack Snyder's. I skipped one chronologically. Joel Schumacher's and whatever. And you can argue which ones work and which ones don't. That to me is where I'm really curious more than anything, is like, obviously he wrote all of these for Creature Commando specifically. And I am really enjoying it. I don't enjoy cheap looking animation anymore. This is a Mac show. Like, can we please spend money on things?
Yeah.
Where not everything looks flat.
I agree. I watched it. It's not impressive, but by the end of it, I have zero negative things to say about that show. So I'm like, did it even matter in this case? I don't know.
Fair.
Like, which is a weird thing to say, because like it didn't stand out as a problem to me because of the type of extreme story it was.
Sure.
With these characters. That being said, we'll look at a higher production value show like What If, and I'll complain about that all day, right? So,
well, that's a combination of problems. Yeah, it's bad. It's just funny in every aspect.
That maybe that's it. Maybe they found the right thing for this medium. And I don't think if they do more animated shows, they're all going to look like this necessarily. I don't think this is the defined art style for DC Studios animation. It's just, like you said, it's probably just time-wise budget. It worked for this thing. Also, I think it was a bit of an experiment. It's very possible this came out and nobody watched it, in which case, whatever. You know what I mean? Also, let's go back to the other point. I love the idea that James Gunn has evolved. I will say him and Peter Safran have evolved and matured to the point where like they're not beholden to this obsessive nature. And I'm guilty of this. I'm covering this for 16 years on Screen Rant. Of this like canon and timelines, like it doesn't matter, and it always rules of like this has to set up this and lead to this, like phase one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe must set up these Infinity Stones to do this. It's like, nah, it doesn't matter. It's like they're gonna get a good script, and when it's ready, not now, not based on a release date, when it's ready, and when I say it's ready, Peter will get the financing and we'll greenlight it. Simple as that. And it's like there's no rules. And he said that on day one when he invited us to the Warner Brothers studio, January before last. He's like, we're not going to call it phases. We're going to call it whatever chapters. Here's the first half of chapter one, 10 projects. But you know what? This may change. We have ideas for another 10. We don't know. It depends. And it's like, we'll greenlight them when they're ready. And he tells us, we asked them this, if they get a script in for something that's important, doesn't matter how important it is. If it's not great, we will delay it. It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the story is ready to go and we believe in it. And I love that. Now, whether they can keep that promise throughout, maybe impossible in this business, but I do love that in theory. And you apply that to this idea of like, hey, the canon doesn't matter as much and the continuity doesn't matter that much. We're just telling different stories. And yeah, they can be different genres, they can be different ratings, different art styles. But the characters that you attach to, wherever they go, we have an actor attached to them and their journey is going to make sense. And I like that idea. And I like the idea they're not telling you, they're not introducing and launching a story. This world's already established. You know what I mean? There are heroes everywhere. Mm-hmm. You look at Superman, with all these characters in it. This is not Superman or Kal-El crashing from Krypton. That's already happened. He's already a superhero. He already has a suit. There are other heroes. There are aliens. This has all happened. This is a world we're jumping into, all these different stories are happening in this world. And everyone's got their own take on it. I love that. I think it's the only way to go. And I had a tough time accepting that in theory before we knew the plan. But I'm like, the result is we get characters we haven't seen before, quality takes on them, on a timeline that's based on the storytelling and not shareholders or release calendars, then every single thing is a win so far. And I'm saying this having seen one show so far, right? But I think it's the absolute mix of like optimizing a strategy and caring about the brand and the characters and more than anything else, which is awesome. And if they can do this, if Superman can come out and win and Peacemaker season 2 can come out and win and whatever they do next, like, and they can do a game when they announce, I'm very curious whatever DC Studios does as their first game that's connected to this universe. If that all hits, then, you know, Marvel's in trouble, right? It doesn't matter how many times you bring back Robert Downey Jr. Like, that, if their stories are better, they are going to build something no matter what. If they have quality stories and they deliver these characters, they are going to build. It's inevitable. I love that. So I don't know. I have a good feelings about that. I feel so hopeful now after watching the show, which is great because I've never felt that way with DC. Like ever since Chris Nolan released Batman Begins, you know what I mean? So
it's a long time ago. Yeah. We've been watching this stuff for a long time. I don't want to sound so pessimistic. Like with Creature Commando specifically, the first two episodes, people can be like, "Oh, Kyle hates James Gunn." I don't hate James Gunn. I really like this use of these characters. A bunch of these characters are ones like I like Dr. Phosphorus. We know Clayface is going to be in it. Using more of the supernatural elements, particularly of the DC universe. I love the supernatural stuff. Justice League Dark is one of my favorite comic book runs in this world. So just teasing parts of that is really cool. As somebody who does love continuity, and I appreciate what James is saying because he doesn't want people to get hung up on that stuff. I think it's a valid approach. However, dude, you got to realize where people are coming from to this. Like, we like continuities. They are really exciting.
Not with DC, though. There's people want everything to end, but the people love certain things about it, right? Like, everybody thought, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no,
there are some Twitter accounts whose entire life brand is like, sell Justice League to Netflix, you know, keep Zack Snyder stuff alive. Yeah. Even Zack and his wife want nothing to do with that. So it's like, guys, chill. Mm-hmm. Also, just look at the quality of that and the financials of that. None of that makes sense by any metric. Yeah. Any rational thought behind that doesn't make any sense.
It was less and less money after BVS. Everything made less and less and less.
Yeah, and that's just box office. The real money, it lost less on everything afterwards too. So it's the licensing, merch, partnership, everything. It's like there's no interest. So, I don't know. I think picking and choosing stuff that he does want to build with, like, you know, Waller. Waller's going to get her own show. She has a role in Peacemaker Season 2. That's cool. Bring her back. And the whole Task Force, whatever they want to call it in this version of it, or reintroduce it. Yeah, why not? And maybe they'll throw another Suicide roster out there and some of these characters will return or it'll be a whole new...
It might just be called Task Force X because they use Suicide Squad.
Yeah, or maybe that's the behind-the-scenes version of it and they have these sub-teams that do things like these Creature Commandos are a team and then you do have another Suicide Squad team or whatever. You know what I mean?
But I wanted to touch on the thing you mentioned, sorry, really quickly. And this has been part of where my frustration as a fan, because gun to my head, which universe do I love more? It's the DC universe. And I know that's a product of growing up through the DCAU, like Batman, the animated series, through Superman, Batman Beyond, Zeta Project, Static, Justice League Unlimited. If you're want to see absolutely incredible connected storylines, watch Justice League Unlimited. It still holds up today. And a lot of those directors have gone on. Joaquin DeSantos, who was one of the main directors of that show, went on to work on Avatar, Legend of Korra, and he's one of the three directors on Across the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. But more so with the announcement thing, what I've been frustrated by is they've announced stuff and then we hear nothing from it.
Well, they had to. The timing of that is the whole new Warner Bros. Discovery ecosystem, right? They're relaunching a company. And they didn't have to invite us, but they did because they want us knowing, hey, because we had so many questions. Do you want us, the biggest media platforms, entertainment publications and trades, just like speculating randomly what's going on? No, invite us in and be transparent about it. Here's what we're thinking right now. James Gunn is like, I wrote this, I'll do this. And we even asked them at the time, keep in mind, when this happened, they knew it was called Superman Legacy and James Gunn was written it, but he wasn't directing it. And Peter said, I want him to direct it. I don't think he has time. James is like, yeah, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, that's awesome. What other studio talks about that in any respect other than like indie films at Sundance? You know, there's no one talks like that. So I love that. The transparency, you know what I mean? And I hope they keep that going. And I mean, look, I'll say this. With Creature Commandos, we've been doing multiple interviews for the episodes with actors and they're proud to talk about it. And Creature Commandos, I mean, we talk about the animation budget and I don't know the audience size. Yeah, I'm going to dig into that in the coming weeks. But like, these are kind of big names attached to these somewhat smaller characters. And they're very proud to talk about this stuff. And I love that. So I do really hope that keeps going. And with these projects, like they announced everything they had. They were so transparent. Here's what we're thinking now. Here's the blueprint. And they told us the status of it then.
Subject to change.
Yeah, subject to change. They told us that. They said they told us things will be delayed. We may have a new idea. A filmmaker may come to me with an amazing pitch and be available in the next 2 years. And Peter will get the money and we'll make it. You know what I mean? Like, yes, That's the filmmaker-friendly environment. And you're not pushing filmmakers to make it based on, oh, Warner Bros. Needs it by next December. No, no, no. James will tell you when the script is ready, and Peter will get the money. It's yes!
Well, yeah, what's our next project? Right? We know Lantern and Supergirl. That's the only things moving forward right now.
Yes, these are Supergirl shooting, or basically early,
January,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. And then another show as well. But yeah. So who knows what comes next? And I don't think that was necessarily the order up front. Supergirl was not meant to be number two on the film slate. So
that comic book is absolutely incredible. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. And I love it. I love that they announced what they had, and here's the plan. And this is what they're working with these people, and this is what they're actively pitching, or this is what they have scripts for. And it's like, that all may change, and they'll tell us when it's ready. And again, it's not all connected, so it doesn't matter. I'm not relying on Creature Commandos for Supergirl to make sense, and Peacemaker season 2 doesn't affect Green Lantern, so it's like, who cares? Like, these scripts, these filmmakers...
But Creature Commandos were obviously affect Peacemaker 2.
Yes.
That kind of goes without
that one,
right? And Waller, to some degree,
in this case,
probably.
Those production lines lined up, right? Also, strangely, like, Peacemaker season 2 was shooting, like, as Superman, kind of, you know what I mean? Like, there's overlap there, which is interesting, and that's all James Gunn, you know, so... I like that he's laying the groundwork his own way and like actually taking the reins. I imagine, I don't know how he's mentally handling doing all of that. Like, he's writing, directing, producing multiple overlapping projects, but also in charge of like a co-CEO of a expanding
big company.
Yeah. It is insane. So I, for that reason alone, I hope he's so successful with these that for the first time in his life, he can like oversee others. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping for the other films. Like, you and I have been following, you've been obviously following this. I mean, I've been following it as a fan, but you've been doing it professionally. Like, that's the optimism in me. It's like DCEU was pitched as that. Obviously, we had that slate.
Yes.
But that's what they wanted it to be. So, I mean, that's kind of the thing I'm hoping for. And what I really also appreciate, and kind of we can wrap it up with this, which was like the concept of also maintaining the Elseworlds story stuff. Like, obviously, they're not going to dump Matt Reeves, who just made $750 million with the Batman universe. They're like, no, you get a pie. We're going to let you be alone and whatever.
Can I add a part to that? Do you know what's interesting about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. This is, again, continuity. How do you do a fresh restart when you have overlapping universes, right? At the time, they're thinking, oh, Joker made $1 billion. We'll do that. Separate universe. Matt Reeves wants to do a thing. It's like, well, we also are wrapping up the Snyderverse, but also... parts that I want to continue. So there is no such thing as a fresh start with 3-year production cycles and an ongoing IP. It's impossible. There's no way to do it. Especially when the guy in charge of it is not coming in as an outsider. He's already in the family. He's already doing, you know what I mean? He already made a show or a movie. So this is the best of both worlds. And the thesis I already covered in detail of how they can handle this going forward. But how it applies to Reeves, they spoke to Reeves and he has the chance to pitch that. If Reeves went to Gunn and said, hey, I have an idea. How about Pattinson does this and meets your Superman and it was a greater story, they would have made that work. They would have made that work. But Reeves said, no, I'm going to do my own thing and maybe it's 2 or 3 movies. And guess what? They made that work. Isn't that cool? Because that was best for Reeves' story. And James Gunn said yes. Is he precious about his Batman and his universe? Nope. Gunn let it happen.
I'm so curious what the DCU Batman's going to be like, though. Like, I am so curious.
If I were to guess, it would be way further in the spectrum from, like, the darkness of the...
Yeah, it'll be way more fantastical.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
Older, obviously, given the nature of the story. I think it'll be, like... I'd like to see, like, an old version of, like, the animated Batman. Like, the Batman animated series. Like, that kind of style.
That's honestly... It's so funny. So many people on the social medias just go, this is the blueprint. Like, if you actually just want to do stories... that happen to share a universe, just watch the DCAU.
Yes, but...
And that's the thing I am...
Specifically,
yeah,
the animated
looking
show...
I'm looking forward to that part.
Specifically, the classic 90s anime show we all love. Like, that... I could see a version of that Batmobile in that Batcave, and that's like... It looks almost otherworldly and timeless, but that's literally Superman. It's a timeless story. You can look at those set photos. There are people who look like they're from the 70s, but there's modern technology, and it's colorful. And it's like, it's hopeful, but it's not laughable, goofy.
It's Art Deco. It's
exactly. And there's a reason they chose shooting locations for that reason. And, you know, why Metropolis will look the way it does. And it's like, I love that. And I think the 90s animated Batman is exactly that. If I were to guess, I would just do that. And then you could have, like, look, you talked about, you mentioned Clayface is coming to Creature Commandos. And, like, look at all the otherworldly characters and stuff in that show, villains and heroes or anti-heroes, whatever you want to call them, that also completely aligns with what I would think about Clayface in the animated show, right? So I think that's the way to go. And it feels so different than Pattinson's muscle car Batman and Oz from the Penguin. So and I don't think audiences would be confused by that. So yeah. But you know what? If it's a great story, doesn't matter. I love the theory. That's the only thing that matters.
Can I ask you a question?
Just one?
Or something of a name to ask you.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Did that count as a question?
Yes.
Damn it.
Well, obviously I kept talking to Rob, but we're going to put question of the week before the outro. This week's question of the week was, what is your favorite Disney film? Got a bunch of different answers, so let's read them. Keen wrote, oh yeah, the question of the week, Lion King. Second one is amazing too. Best Disney sequel, keep it keen, Keen Machine. Gab of Movies to Watch Before You Die wrote in, my favorite Disney movies are The Lion King, Mulan, Aladdin, and Up. Does that count? Does Pixar count? Dylan Pollack of Movies to Watch Before You Die. So we got both of them this week. Favorite Disney animated film? That's not a simple question at all. I think I'll put The Emperor's New Groove and Lilo and Stitch at the top. And I think both are still underrated. I asked Dylan about neither being from the Disney Renaissance. And he responded, I mean, if I was picking from there specifically, I'd say The Lion King, but I don't revisit that as often as I do the other two. Scotty Cameron wrote in, I might have to be Lilo and Stitch. That had a special place for me growing up. And then Scotty Cameron, I love you so much, wrote this Bible that had to talk about Superman and Lois. And I'm going to read the whole thing. So here we go. I think the conversation about Superman and Lois and its connectivity to the Arrowverse is an interesting one. It definitely a conundrum that arises when these mega franchises in film and TV are named after the universe they're set in. I've got to zoom in because my vision is so bad. They're set in, which is always a singular noun. Then when you introduce the multiverse, it then creates tension and debate over what is and is considered part of something like the Arrowverse, Marvel Cinematic Universe, DC Extended Universe, or the new DC Cinematic Universe, all of which are using singular nouns, which means they're referring to one universe and not several universes. So on one hand, Superman and Lois is connected to the Arrowverse because it's set in the same multiverse as the Arrowverse. On the other hand, it does not actually take place in the Arrowverse because it's set in a universe where Superman and Steel are the only superheroes the universe had until their kids became superheroes. So there is no Supergirl, Flashback, Lightning, Green Arrow, or Justice League in this universe. Just Superman, Steel 1, Steel 2, and the Superboys. Also, the Lex Luthor is completely different from the Arrowverse version. That sparks debate on if Superman and Lois is actually an Arrowverse show because it isn't set in the Arrowverse. If we accept that Superman and Lois is an Arrowverse show on the grounds that it exists in the same multiverse as the Arrow show, then that would make Titans, Doom Patrol, Smallville, Gotham, Krypton, and Peacemaker Arrowverse shows too, since Crisis on Infinite Earths confirmed all those universes exist in the same multiverse as the Arrowverse. We see the Arrowverse Flash interact with the DCEU Flash, and that crossover is the DCEU by extension. Both the Snyderverse and the Hamadaverse part of the Arrowverse now. Maybe these should have been rebranded with plural nouns once we stepped into the multiverse. The Arrowverses, Marvel Cinematic Universes, DC Extended Universe, and the DC Universe, and if the DCU enters the multiverse terrain. So that way there's no arguing about it being part of the franchise because Arrowverse establishes it's referring to multiple universes. Yeah, that would have been nice to see Supergirl in Superman and Lois, and it would raise questions on how she'd be introduced. Does her rocket land on Earth sometime after season 2, since General Lane established Superman as the only hero of the universe? Does she become Supergirl after season 2 on that show? Having her in a shot of Superman and the Superboys and Steel is a neat idea because Superman could say in his narration, my cousin arrived on Earth since then and she joined us as heroes. That way it's digestible and gets to the point. It doesn't dwell too much on that not being the same Supergirl we see in Supergirl. We already got a revamped Lex that's quite different than the Supergirl Lex and is even played by a different actor. Doing likewise with Supergirl is a bridge too far. I think that's a lot of really interesting points. Scotty, more than anything, I wanted to see the actress Melissa Benoist in Superman and Lois because, of course, we know Tyler Hoechlin played the version of Superman that was her cousin in Supergirl. I think that's a really great perspective on the use of multiverses and branding of a shared universe. So other than that, I don't have any points because I think you kind of laid them all out. The contention's always going to exist, but maybe it'll be less argumentative now that whatever version of the CW universe shows has come to an end. And as I discussed with Andy, it was a brilliant ending, and I'm really glad that we did get to see it. This week's question of the week is, based on all of the announced projects from the DCU, which project are you most looking forward to? To let me know, you can write an email, filmrealistpod@gmail.com, comment directly on YouTube or Spotify, or send me an @message, reply, tweet, thread, blue sky, whatever you want to do. I'll look for them there, and I can't wait to respond to your answers next week. Now let's say goodbye to Rob Keyes. Rob, we're probably going to keep going on and on, but I feel like now's a good point to probably end the episode. Rob Keyes is on all the things, more specifically ScreenRant.com, my favorite movie website for all the stuff. I mean, I'm going to beat cards on the table. I don't really read the movie reviews anymore unless I've already recorded mine, because
that's fair.
I don't want somebody else's opinion affecting my own. So Rob is on all the things. You're FailCube on Instagram, but Rob_Keyes on everything else.
Yeah. Rob Keyes or Rob_Keyes on Threads and X and Blue Sky. And yeah. I'm trying to
K-E-Y-S.
K-E-Y-E-S.
E-S,
extra E, extra E. Yeah. Everyone gets that wrong.
I've never messed that up before. That's so weird.
You're right. I know you're trying to say it, but you're doing backwards. It's too late. Yes.
We've been friends for like 10 years. It's a struggle bus right now.
And lots of stuff coming up. Lots of stuff coming up. So in the new year, especially. So I keep your eyes on screen for sure.
Yes. And you have some of my favorite press junket stuff. So that's always fun. Mm-hmm. My name is Colin Narania. If you're listening to the show for the first time, welcome. If you did love this show, maybe check out the back catalog of 119 episodes. Consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcast.
Get out there and hit that thing in 5 stars. And if you're not going to do 5 stars, uninstall, get a new phone. Like, come on now. You got to be more assertive. We need more 5-star reviews.
I know a lot of people also listen on Spotify, so I do really appreciate that. A bunch of the people have started subscribing on YouTube, which is really amazing. If you want to see full trailer reactions, they are there. You're only ever going to see clips for those on TikTok and Instagram. Next week's episode is going to potentially be a review of the last Spum movie with Kraven the Hunter. So get excited for another Spider-Man character movie universe, because we love those. Oh boy. My name is Kyle Narania, and I will see you next time.